driving home at the moment. This morning I woke in Birmingham, slightly worse for wear, with a self-inflicted headache. A good night out was had, but I had to head back. So I was heading back south from Birmingham and the phone rang and I heard my grandmother. It was very, very shaky, very quiet voice, and I'm thinking, oh, this doesn't sound good. She quite often phones and says that she doesn't feel very good at all, but not actually saying how bad she felt had me worrying, so I decided to deviate from the motorway and head over to Hinckley, where she lives. I stopped off at the supermarket and picked up some of the things she likes to eat, because I know that her cupboards are probably bare right now, and got her some salamis and some pickles and some croissants and some pastas and all the things she likes. Food seems to be, you know, one of the few luxuries she enjoys. And I get to the house and the back door is open and I step inside and I can see through to the living room. The image of my grandmother kind of slumped to the side in her chair, and I called her name whilst I'm standing there holding two heavy carrier bags and nothing. And I call her name again, nothing. And for a moment there, my heart is right in my throat. I think this is it. And I guess it was a moment of panic, but I shout, "Nonna!" She just shocks awake, kind of looking up. And I'm like, "Oh my God," I said, "I thought you were dead." She laughed. She laughed in a kind of if-only way. She talks sometimes about how, you know, she feels like she's had her fill. She says it in a lot cruder terms than I would say. I don't think it's disrespectful for somebody in their 85th year to say they're fed up with life and they'd just like to get on. You know, they're tired. I think they deserve the rest, to be honest, but it's impossible to prepare yourself, isn't it? So I unpack the shopping and I go and see, and she's just exhausted. She's got a Lemsip, or her own version of Lemsip, which is probably cocodamols crushed up in a honey and lemon drink. And she wants some more fluid, so I make her a cup of tea and I give her a mince pie that she doesn't touch. But she will touch the salami and the spicy meats that I bought her, and she hungrily shoves that in her mouth, and I'm thinking, what have you had for lunch, if anything? I don't know. So it's very hard to see relatives ill in any way. There's a letter on the table in front of her, and it's saying that she's due, or she's unable to have a swine flu jab on the 21st, and she kind of says, can I book her in? So I quickly phone the surgery and book her in. I don't mention that she's feeling flu-y now, because they probably won't let her have it. I'm not sure. I'm sure in the 11 days' time when she'll actually get round to having it, I'm hoping she'll be feeling better then. And then on the front page of the local newspaper is the face of a doctor I know, but I can't remember his name off the top of my head. I know him because he used to come and see my granddad a lot. My granddad was housebound for many years. He used to work at a cinema in Coventry, and fell off the roof once, damaged a nerve in his leg and never really could walk again properly. Never sued, even though none of the health and safety practices were followed. He kind of felt like he owed something to the Rank Corporation, and they didn't deserve to be sued, he thought, but he just carried on suffering. And my grandmother saying, this story has really, really made my day, because the doctor had been voted by all of his patients as this top doc, this the favourite in the area. and he was apparently holding up the certificate, and my grandmother said, oh, he was lovely to us, he was lovely to us. And I remember the story. He was called out because my granddad said, I'm really, really not feeling very well. And he was kind of bit bedridden at the time, at home, which is where he wanted to be. And the doctor came out and kind of gave him the once over and said, if you still feel like this in the morning, give me a call. Well, he didn't make the morning. He died later that night. My mother was with him at the time, which was kind of nice, and he was at home, which is exactly what he wanted. But the doctor finding out the next morning, because obviously he had to sign a death certificate being the last person to see him, or some rules and regulations, and he came over and he apologised to my grandmother, and he just said, I'm so sorry, if I'd have known he was going to die, I would have sent him to hospital. And my grandmother was, don't be silly, he wanted to die at home. That's the last thing he wanted to do, go to hospital. And she just keeps saying on how polite and how nice the doctor was to come and apologise for missing my grandmother's husband's imminent death. And it's strange, isn't it? She's looking to death and dying as a personal goal, almost, the last sanctuary, which is really sad. She's so happy and so full of life when, you know, when I take my son over, or when the family visits from Brazil. But quite often she's just very, very tired. And she knew that my granddad didn't want to hang around anymore, and that she was really thankful that he went peacefully at home. And she kind of thanks the doctor for missing the fact. We try so hard to keep people alive, so hard to just drag things out when, I don't know, I can see lots of arguments for euthanasia. I can only speak from, you know, my own personal choice here. I wouldn't wish it on anybody in case they're not in sound mind. I know there's lots of moral and ethical conversations to be had around that, but I know my grandmother, if somebody, particularly today, said, you know, you could click your heels and end up in some lovely Swiss doctor's surgery with the opportunity to finish it now, I really strongly believe she probably would. After saying goodbye to everybody and doing her best to tidy up any loose ends. But no matter how much she wants to go, no matter how much she's ready, it's very difficult in our society to prepare yourself and ready yourself for the loss of a loved one. Very reluctantly had to leave her with some drink and make sure she was, you know, kind of strong enough to get to bed and have a rest, but I just have to go and drive the 40-50 miles south a little bit further, because I've got a son the other end, the other kind of side of the circle of life, who is just starting out, and he's waiting for me at a nursery, and I really don't want him to once again be the last one in the room waiting for his daddy to come and pick him up. So, all going well, I should be there in 30 minutes or so.